Welcome to Ever Beyond. On Wolf Spirit Radio, everbeyondradio.com, Tiernasau from Ireland, scottishsovereignsontheland.ning.com. Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond. And welcome once again to Ever Beyond. This is JP. We're on all these radio stations, and here I am in the middle of nowhere, up in Scotland, and I have no guest. I have no idea what's going to happen in the next 2 hours, but I'm sure it's going to be all right, because it usually is, and it always works out that something interesting happens, and sometimes I have a guest booked, and sometimes I have in a couple of days' time I'll do some readings or something like that. But today I have absolutely, I'm totally empty. Let's see how this thing forms, because, as I said, things form. So, hello to everybody in the chat room. I know you can hear me. It's good to be here. Now, where are we? It's been a while. So, the last show I did was with Al. We're talking about the machinery you use to the technical discussion. It was a rather technical discussion. Because he's a paranormal investigating, basically he's a kind of debunker. Usually not the kind of person that we normally have on the show, because like most of the people that accept that, you know, that paranormal things happen, he says no, you know, he's like, no. So it's always good to get a bit of balance. So I'm just talking with a guy now. This might be interested. Asking about Nazis. So this brings us to Friday night. I was producing a show, or co-producing a show with Ed Opperman, and he had a guest on Arnaldo Lerma. On air just now. Well, you know, we might get him on, you never know. So he was talking about Project Paperclip. I can nutshell it, what he was talking about. Excellent. Okay, so he's telling me about some RTFs. Okay. Where do I Google? Yes. So he asked me to Google Lermanet paperclip. So I'm just going to do that right now. And you get a document. And it's an RTF document that will download to your computer. It's not very large. There we go. So I open it up. And, well, maybe I'll just sit here and read this. If anybody, this is an interesting document. This is okay. So this is Arnie, Let me just see. There's a few pages. Yeah. Yeah, but this should be an interesting read. So I'm going to read this out to you, so that everybody gets the chance to hear what it is. I'm going to read on air, if that's okay. So I'm just asking, you know, it's just the argument, like, there we go, see, things happen, you know, let's see what happens. If you've been following the last few episodes of Ever Beyond, and when I've been talking about what I've been learning about, or indeed on Journeys when I haven't got a guest either, I've been doing various things, reading speeches. I read a speech by Philip K. Dick, which was a very interesting speech about the looping nature of time. I also have been reading out, I read a book by one of my guests a few months ago, called Atlantis, the Dark Continent. And it was, you know, it was pretty broad-ranging and very long-distance sort of, you know, it dealt with a long time period, many, many, you know, dozens of thousands of years. And so I was, so I read that. That was a very interesting book. And then, you know, I've been, since reading The Sands of Time, I've been understanding that a lot of the issues that are affecting us now are a repeat of the issues that happened 70 years ago in the late 1930s. And what I'm seeing is a replay, in a way, of that life. And I'm just wondering, you know, is that what every life is going to be about? Is every life some sort of totalitarian takeover? And, you know, we just do the same battle over and over again. And there's a weird Truman Show type Matrix movie where we think we're getting on with things and we think we're breaking through and we think we're defeating the enemy and we're just running around inside their maze. I wonder. So, let me just have a look here. Thank you. That's good. Okay, so I can't see his he's not got a message back, so let's just close a few of these. That one, and this one, and that one, and this one, and I leave that one open. Right, okay. So now, let's just scale that up a little bit. I can go even further. That's going to go 200. Yeah, that will do. So, this is a story by Arnaldo Lerma, L-E-R-M-A. Okay, and he was a guest, and you can hear him speak on the Opperman Report, and that's available in the archive, the Opperman Report interview. So, I was very interested in his story because it was starting to match up with the stories that I've been hearing about the Nazi Bell, and also, you know, through the book that I was reading just a couple of weeks ago, which was called Die Glocke, or The Bell, and it's the story of the Nazi Bell. And I think it's a historical thing that needs to be known, because, you know, we all know. In America, you have this thing, what do they call it? Robert Oppenheim had the Manhattan Project, that's right. And it was a top secret thing involving tens of thousands of people. Okay, so when people say, oh, that couldn't possibly be true, you know, how, you know, like the mafia killing Kennedy or, you know, stuff like that. People say, you know, how can you keep a secret with tens of thousands of people? Well, it happened. It's something in your history. It's like normal, right? That's why it's secret. That's what secret's about, you know. Here we're here to hopefully catch up, because now I'm able to reveal a 70-year-old secret. And, you know, was it 1944? 2015? Yeah. 70 years ago. Okay, so this is a story by Arnie. We call him Arnie now. Arnie Lehmer. How the Nazis, or sociopaths, won World War II. In 2004, I got a phone call from a gentleman that I'd done background music system in his upscale restaurant at Courthouse Plaza on the Metro line in Arlington, Virginia. The conversation went like this. Hi, Bruce, got a problem at the... This is Arnie, right? Hi, Bruce, got a problem with the restaurant. Bruce says, oh, no, I'm not calling about that. I sold that years ago. Well, what can I do for you? I've been reading about you on the net. I bet you have. My father died some years ago. The guy in glasses next to Ike and showing in room with Ike and Alan Dulles. And in a locked roll-top desk, which I only recently opened and started reading through his papers. The material was so mind-blowing, so unsettling, that I thought I might be going crazy. But after all you've been through fighting Scientology over the years, I thought of you. That you, of all people, might be capable of dealing with it. Well, this certainly sounds interesting. How about I come over and you tell me the whole story? So, I went over there. God, I don't have to do more characterization. Sorry about the voices. I've only got like two voices, right? And they have different accents, but they're two voices, all right? So, it's hard when there's three people in the room, I have to do strange things. Anyway, so I went over there with a recorder and sat down in his dad's office, and he told me what he found. When the import of stories of his story started to get through to me to a point that I found parts of the story unbelievable, Bruce whipped out a pile of photos and letter from the ex-defense secretary, Robert McNamara. My eyes got really big. Here is what happened to the world and why Patton was diverted south instead of being first into Berlin, and then perhaps why he was killed when he stepped off that jeep after coming home. So, there's a picture. You can all download this RTF. You can all download the source of that. I'll just paste the image into... Where did I go? Google. There we go. Alright. So, I'll just paste into the chat room the link. Yeah, it's a bit of a slow day, so I hope everybody is fine. I just put that link in there, but there you go. So you can all have a look, and you can see the picture. It's a nicely formatted document. Nicely written. Okay. So, there's a kid. The kid at the top of the stairs in the first picture is my source, Mr. Bruce Carroll. The top of the letter from Defense Secretary Robert McNamara is shown in second image, which shows Dulles, Bruce's father, and President Eisenhower in the same room having a heated conversation. You can see Ike's cheeks rather rosy, rather red. U.S. Defense Secretary McNamara told Bruce that this story needs to be told. That is the top of his letter in the photo above. I took that photo with my camera of these photos spread on the table. I have a copy of the McNamara letter somewhere in my piles of papers here. Okay, here's the story. Patton, as you recall, really wanted to be first into Berlin. He was furious when he got orders to turn the 5th Army east towards Ludwikowice, now in Poland, and secure a certain facility 4 hours south of Berlin. This is the super-secret facility that housed the Nazi Bell advanced technology. Okay, there's another link there, Nazi Bell uncovered. Good, we'll have a look at that. It was 4 hours south of Berlin in a mine near what is now Ludwikowice, Poland. When he got to this facility, it was empty, completely cleaned out, nothing there, and he was furious. Seems the OSS, Office of Strategic Services, forerunner to the US CIA, DIA, station chief in that sector south of the Berlin at the close of World War II, was... Hang on. Where's my sound effects? Let me just set up my sound effects so I can get this going. Right, okay. Let's say that again. Yes. It seems the OSS station chief in that sector south of Berlin at the close of World War II was... Alan Dulles. Yes. Dulles had cut a secret deal with the Nazis at that facility and brought the entire team and their families back and all their stuff, which included the Psychopolitical Research Division and a division that was reverse engineering UFO technology. That's interesting. Which contradicts what happened at the end of the book, but let's see. See how this pans out. We've all got an interest in this story. Let's read this up. The whole facility comes to us before the official start of Operation Paperclip. Due to the nature of the facility and data involved, and to hide the fact that the Nazis brought over here, it was highly classified, and a behind-the-scenes, highly classified advanced technology group was created where they can continue their research. Interesting, Brian. This may have been a seminal point in the creation of what has grown to become referred to the US Black Budget Advanced Technology Effort. Bruce's father has a wiki page here, Thomas H. Carroll. Wiki. He served in the US Naval Reserve as a lieutenant junior grade during World War II. What is omitted from this page is that at the close of World War II, he was the director of Operation Paperclip. He was the one who gave Nazis new names and assigned them to positions of employment in the USA. Quote, to circumvent President Truman's anti-Nazi order and the Allied Potsdam and Yalta agreements, the JIOA worked independently to create false employment and political biographies for the scientists. The JIOA also expunged from the public record the science's Nazi party memberships and regime affiliations. Once bleached of their Nazism, the scientists were granted security clearances by the US government to work in the United States. Paperclip, the project's operational name, derived from the paperclips used to attach the scientists' new political personae to their US government scientist JIOA personnel files. You will see, if you look at paperclip page on Wiki, they say 800 rocket guys. Note, it used to say 800 or so. Now it says 1,500. That number is also too low by an order of magnitude. Yeah, it's more like 100,000, 15,000. At least. From his father's papers, he concluded that they brought over many thousands, perhaps tens of thousands, of the smartest guys in Germany. Every scientist they could get their hands on, every psychologist, every psychiatrist, every chemist, biologist. They were assigned to OSS and the CIA. The OSS section that became DIA and CIA to faculties' positions in American universities. All the big industrial manufacturers and research groups, including Los Alamos and many, went to a newly formed structure that was itself completely unknown to the public or to military. A structure that, due to the nature of the personnel involved, i.e. ex-Nazis, was itself secret. What is now described as the US black budget operation that deals with UFOs and other advanced technology. The Dr. Strangelove character in the movie of the same name is but a caricature to those guys they brought over. When Eisenhower warned about the military-industrial complex, this is what he was warning about. He couldn't say paperclip, as it was classified. After he was done with paperclip, he was at the Ford Foundation. His nickname there was the Fifth Rider of the Apocalypse. The Ford Foundation had a psychological studies division that sent out proposals for certain researches to be done. Seems the directors used to take turns running it because the materials were so disturbing. They tended to drive you mad if you read too much of the stuff. Now, remember, Henry Ford financed Hitler's rise. These guys at the Ford Foundation and others in the alphabet soup of think tanks and non-profit research groups surrounding Washington, D.C., they planned little houses built of ticky-tacky in the suburbs all the same, and everybody having to drive a car that would use petrol, to drive to a central corporately controlled corporate distribution point, a mall. This is what destroyed main streets and local groceries all across the U.S. This is why other countries' cities look as they do, and we have malls and highways, and now dead more main streets. Sorry, you call them malls, don't you? Not malls. Malls. All corporately, centrally controlled, driving all the little businessmen out of business. This was their American dream, which they used to bribe the American people that our way of life was superior, and allowed a pattern of world conquest and meddling to make the world safe for democracy. To make the world safe for democracy, they said, when in fact they were making the world safe for U.S. corporate interests and turning Americans into consumers. The word consumer, perhaps, was coined there at the Ford Foundation. We were turned into cogs in the wheel of a global conquest machine run by unseen masters with Nazi advanced technology, and Americans' minds were manipulated by these same advanced technologies that were used to build and manage the Third Reich. They planned the American dream. They planned the petrodollar. They have been overthrowing countries ever since to steal their resources. Most recently, to steal their gold. All by giving Americans a sure story and lies. Shiny trinkets, like they brought Manhattan from the Indians. Worthless paper money, and a sure story called the American Dream. Dr. Robert Oppenheimer tried to warn us in the Journal of the Atomic Scientists in 1952. Remember, I mentioned Robert Oppenheimer a while ago. In the last 10 years, physicists have been extraordinarily noisy about the immense powers, largely through their efforts, but through other efforts as well, have come into the possession of man, powers notably and strikingly for very large scale and dreadful destruction. We have spoken of our responsibilities and our obligations to society in terms that sound very provincial, because the psychologist can hardly do anything without realizing that for him, the acquisition of knowledge opens up the most terrifying prospects of controlling what people do and how they feel. This is true for all of you who are engaged in practice. And as the corpus of psychology gains in certitude and subtlety and skill, I can see the physicist's pleas that what he discovers be used with humanity and be used wisely, will seem trivial compared with to those pleas which you will have to make and for which you will be responsible. Prelude for the next section, the Scientology connections. History has been edited. If you dig far enough, you will find that National Socialists had to cut a deal with the German Zionist Party to get into power, and that made them the Nazis. All you will see are shadows, but the shadows seem to overlap. There is a corporation in Panama to which Scientology's flagship, called the Free Winds, is registered as a Panamanian flagged vessel called Majestic Cruise Lines. A conversation with a security guide for a large UFO disclosure project confided that contacts with the US black budget stated that there is a connection to Scientology or to its creation, but the involvement is classified at majestic level, the same as pieces of UFO. Majestic is also a reference to the Majestic 12 document from 1947, and a level of secrecy 4 levels above top secret. Perhaps the US black budget UFO advanced technology program was born with that data from Germany that Dulles got. Very likely, if he infiltrated the Bell. It included the psychological mind control stuff from the Reich. Data that would have been classified above top secret at Majestic level. This also happens to be the final trick. When you finally discover the truth, it is so incredible, it blows your mind. L. Ron Hubbard said in OT3, Operating Thetan Level 3, Note 1A, that everything you see around you is that way because of the implants in Incident 2. It is actually that way because of the Nazis, because of the Ford Foundation et al. The same operation has been running on America since the 1950s. The Nazis got their mind control tech from the experiments run in their prison camps. This is where they put together Navy intel and put Hubbard to work on pulping the fiction that is the source of much of what we think is the tech. Fletcher Prouty claimed in a letter that Hubbard's military record may have been sheep-dipped, was the phrase he used, modified, a fabrication. He also indicated in a later letter to a friend of mine that his previous information done for Scientology should be considered a work for hire. The real advanced technology in Scientology, note the same phrase used to describe the upper-level materials by their lawyer in a lawsuit against the author, is the ability to control what a person believes to be true. Exactly what Dr. Oppenheimer tried to warn us about in 1952, and the rest is just a short story. Bruce remembers the following vividly because he used to read science fiction. His dad, after he was at the Ford Foundation, was the president of George Washington University until 1963. He said that his dad often used to bring professors home for dinners. One day he brought home a psychologist named Dr. Mossell, who told a story about a student of his that had gone missing. He found that student in a straitjacket in a padded cell at a notorious, in my time growing up in DC, mental hospital that is now torn down. St. Elizabeth's Mental Hospital. St. Elizabeth's was revealed as a site during congressional hearings as being used for MK Ultra. That student's name was Lafayette Ronald Hubbard. That is why his grades are so bad. I got the feeling during our meetings that someone had been trying to drive Bruce insane after he opened his father's desk. I did not try to tell anyone about his story because I thought he had actually would do the telling. As almost a decade has gone by, I felt someone had to get this out there as we are running out of time to prevent World War III. Bruce believes his father was murdered, induced to have a heart attack. A few leaves from the white oleander that grows by the sides of the roads in California would do that. Prior to his father's heart attack, he indicates that his father began to have an ethical dilemma about the work he had done in Operation Paperclip and the Ford Foundation. Much like Lisa McPherson, had an ethical dilemma in Scientology, and then she was dead. LisaMcPherson.org. LisaMcPherson.org. In 1995, one of my partners of a law firm... one of the partners of a law firm representing me in RTC versus Lerma was leaning on me to take some cash from Scientology and walk away. That law firm was four blocks from the US Capitol. I could kick myself for not having asked about this comment at the time, but he looked me dead in the eye and told me, regarding Scientology, as an inducement to accept that one offer. Arnie, they have friends in high places. The end. So, that's Arnie's story about how Nazis from Operation Paperclip and presumably some, I mean, we did also know that the bell was operated in different groups. So it could well be. I mean, it did sound. Oh, where was he going? That was in Poland. I'm going to have to check the. If anybody wants to, you can Google Castle Kzias. 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 And what was the name of that town? If anybody's interested in this. Where was it? Ludwikovic. Let's see. Let's just look the thing up. I'll Google that for me. Ludwikovic. Let's see how far that is from where I was looking at. Okay, Ludwikovic. Okay. I wonder if that's well, Bartnica. I have no idea where I am. This is all in Poland. Yeah. I'm going to have to check that out. It's quite... Well, that's well deep in Poland, isn't it? Yes. Wałbrzych. Where's Berlin? That's miles. Plenty of miles from Berlin. Anyway, meanwhile... Okay. Good. Cool. So that's anyway, so that's Arnaldo's story, Arnie's story, and it kind of ties in. And so if you're interested in discussing this, do call in. I'm going to play the call in number jingle again.
Call in to Wall Spirit Radio in Britain on 0141 356 4141. That's 0141 356 4141. And in America, 775 773 3431. 775 773 3431. On Skype, it's Wolf Spirit Radio. Welcome to Wolf Spirit Radio.
Welcome back to, there we go, a castle in Wałbrzych in Lower Silesian Wołodowice, Poland. It was built, yes, Wałbrzych. Yeah, so that's Castle Kzias. And then there's this other place, which I'm just going to just pop in the typewriter. Come on. There we go. Ludwikovic. So, yes. Yeah, so if you actually, you know, I was looking on Google Maps a few days ago, and it's quite a Google Earth. It's quite wonderful to look at this castle. Because when you look at it at night, it's totally creepy, because you see this castle, and as you put your mouse over it, it lights up blue, like, you know, if you kind of wiggle your mouse over it, it looks like it's lightning storms all around it, you know, just lighting the place up, which was what it was like in those days. It was quite interesting and creepy. Yes, that's Castle Kzias. I can probably dig out the location of that, because I was on Google Maps the other day. I wonder if that... Okay, so luckily this computer is not being used for anything else, and so I can look at Google Earth. It's actually probably interrupt my upload, but let's see. Google Earth, where are you? Now I can't find it. Now I can't find it all in the, like, hundred... Oh, there we are, Google Earth. Yes. There we are. Kzias. Kzias. Yeah. Anyway, yes, it's a all right, okay, so it's grim. Anyway, so the castle where they researched the bell was probably not the only castle, because, well, it turns out, you know, if anybody was listening to the book reading, the development of the bell, they kind of ran it three times in this experiment. You know, the developers, what you got to remember is that, you know, in the military and industrial complex, everything is completely compartmentalized. No one person knows everything apart from people like Martin Bormann and what's his name, the hitman, Baron Sporenberg. Interestingly, yes, I watched the film Cabaret last night, which was about the same sort of era. Right, let's see if I can go. There we go. Walbridge, Poland. There we go. Hit it. And the world turns and zooms in down on Ksaskia's castle. I wish I could pronounce that. There it is. Right, now if I can get a marker on that, I'll give you the coordinates. direction. No, it's only going to give me directions. Okay. Anyway, so that's where that is, and I'll have a look later. So that would be really good. I'm just getting a message through from Arnaldo. So there's a picture evolving. There's a picture emerging of a kind of larger plan. It's involving the Scientologists. Now, we've seen before how powerful the Scientologists are. Yeah. Yeah. All right. There we go. I'm getting so basically, you know, you can't really attack them because, it's basically like a kind of fanatical religion. It creates fanatics, and it does this through the use of the technique. And the technique is essentially you selling. It's a sales technique, and it's been used on you over and over and over again. And it's a, it's basically telling you that you've got something that you haven't got. It's the same sales technique that you get when you get a pop-up on your computer. You have a virus. Please click this button and we will fix it for you. That's exactly the same thing. That's exactly the same as what Scientology does. Scientology tells you have the, what is it, reactive mind, they call it. the reactive mind is this thing that we're supposed to have if we were Scientologists. We believe the signs of that, we have this thing, and basically everybody in Scientology pays the corporation to have this thing removed by the use of an auditing device. And this is where Arnie came in, because Arnie was a electrical engineer, and they brought him in to iron out a few production bugs. So this is a response from Arnie here. In a freedom of information case against NSA in federal court 3 months back, the judge called the attorneys into chambers. He asked why the US attorney to explain why the government had not responded to discovery requests. The attorney told the federal judge, "The government believes that events will overtake these proceedings." as described by plaintiff's attorney upon exiting.
I.e. a Nazi takeover. Or a Nazi defeat.
Yeah, so I'm having this live conversation here. So, chat rooms all over the place, Dennis. No, you can't go directly. Yes, that's right. You're a sinner, but you're special. Let us fix you. And that's really what the whole thing is. So, what can I say? You're all perfect. You're all loved. You're all deeply loved by your own soul. Who is you? Who you are? You are your soul. You don't need to get love from anybody. Not husbands, wives, children, parents. When you're in touch with your soul, you don't need love. You only need love when it's been beaten out of you. You've been traumatized out of it. That's right. Yes. So... yeah, I'd like to have Arnie on, but... yeah. I'm just asking him. Hang on, put a tune on. You call him. Yeah.
Call in to Wolf Spirit Radio in Britain on 0141-356-4141. That's 0141-356-4141. And in America, 775-773-3431. 775-773-3431. Skype, it's Wolf Spirit Radio. Welcome to Wolf Spirit Radio.
Okay, so I've asked him if he wants to come on now. So he's going to send me another document for me to read here to you. Okay.
Okay. Prepare the audience.
Oh, his voice is wearing out. Yeah. So I'm going to read a bit. I'm going to read a bit, and
okay. And Nancy's.
So I'm going to bring. I'm going to bring Nancy in first, and then Arnie's going to send me another document. Hey there.
Hey there. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm gonna speak to you first,
I got the other one on. Sorry.
You got the other one, yeah, that's right. So I knew I'm echoing in my own brain as well as outside. That's very disturbing.
I couldn't figure out what was wrong with the station.
Good afternoon, sweetie. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm actually fascinated with Arnie. I wish you could get him on to ask him more about this whole story, because it Scientology is one of those things that I just had a complete aversion to and couldn't even get beyond the aversion to figure out why I felt that there was an evil behind it.
Well,
so,
yeah.
What I'm here to do is to ask you to tell me more about it. Just, you know, because I don't think probably a lot of us had the same reaction. And you seem to have been able to at least get beyond that to understand, you know, basically what it is, so.
Okay, right. So, here's the thing. We know that there is a plan afoot to create a world religion that is part of the New World Order, right?
Yes.
Okay, so how do we create a religion? We create believers. and they have to believe in something, and our sophisticated humanity now, we've seen science fiction, we see all this stuff, and the only thing that is now overwhelming for people are atomic weapons and space aliens, right?
Well, and transhumanism and, you know, control of, with implants and control with Wi-Fi, and I mean, they've taken it to a whole new level.
That's right. So, imagine now that there's a solution to all the madness in the world. Because the world appears to be mad, doesn't it? Appears to be mad and bad and awful.
And stupid.
Wouldn't it be great if there was a solution to the madness in the world? Yeah? Here's the thing.
That's Scientology?
That's how they sell it. So, what they do, and I don't know, many people may have actually had this. They may have been met by a person in the street. You go into any busy city, and there'll be people canvassing on the street. And they will ask somebody, are you happy? Simple questions like that. And it's the beginning of the interrogation process. They call it auditing. And it seems kind of innocuous at first, but the questions get deeper and deeper and deeper until finally you get to realize that you're actually quite insane just through the asking of these questions, because they lead you through a path. They manipulate you down a path, which means I've got this terrible thing called a reactive mind, and that it's a bad thing that needs to be destroyed. And that these people have the answer, and it's called auditing, and it will help reduce the effect of these things. And indeed, after an audit, one does feel great, because it's essentially a kind of electronic lie-detecting confessional. Except all of your information is logged and data mined.
Now, let me understand this. This auditing is done by some kind of a device, or is it just questions?
Right. This is where Arnie came in. Right. It's a thing called that they call an E machine, and it's supposed to be a an emotional meter. Right. And it's very much like a mood ring or a. It's one third of a polygraph. You know what a polygraph is, don't you?
Yeah, it's a lie detector.
That's right. Well, a polygraph measures three things. It measures your skin resistance, it measures your heartbeat, and it measures your encephalography, you know, your brain waves, I think. One of those. Anyway, it measures three things. And essentially the E-machine is basically you hold on to two large cylinders of copper, right, which give a really good electrical connection to your hand. And it's a great big meter, a great big needle, you know, and on one side it's like guilty, and the other side is, oh, cool. And the question now, I'm just going to try and remember exactly the question that they ask, because it's really snarky. It's like, when did you last beat your wife? It's one of those questions that leads you, and it's, have you ever done something that you nearly got away with, or have you ever done something that you just about got away with? You see, because it's a bit of guilt, and that obviously will register, and so they'll say, okay, let's go into that. And in a way, it's a bit like very much like the way I work when I'm helping people debug their emotions. But what it then goes on to do is it goes in and it takes you into past lives or apparent past lives that could possibly be fed. And so you end up believing, and they go back and back and back and back and back, and you end up believing in a kind of false story that you've kind of half created yourself. You've volunteered to trap yourself in this little thing as someone who is completely infested by demons, which they call Thetans, Thetans, it's
a scam.
It's money. You know, L. Ron Hubbard, he said, you know, the only way to make really good money is to build a religion. And he made good money. You know, go figure. So...
Okay, well, can I get some clarity here? Now, so they got you on the machine, and the machine is reading your emotions.
Yeah.
So they are watching the machine, and when you become... And they start telling you a story or leading you down a path of a story, and when they get an emotional tweak, then they follow that.
Yeah.
Is that basically what it is?
Yeah.
Okay. And so there, but the story that they want you to come away with is always the same basic theme.
Well, basically, it means that, you know, and it'll work. You see, this is the thing. It'll work. They'll debug you all the way back to your birth. Right, maybe even pre-birth, but they'll get the traumas out. It does kind of work, but they then push you further back and cause you to create another scenario that proves their scenario that you've got this reactive mind that's worked through these different lifetimes. Do you see what I mean?
That
you,
okay, and what do you mean? What are you defining a reactive mind as?
This is, well, that's what they define. This is this.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah. What did they define it as?
It's the thing that people believe that they've got. It's like new and improved. It actually means nothing. Of course, your mind reacts. It's like my mind reacts to bullshit like everybody else's. You know, or maybe my stomach does. So. Basically, the reactive mind doesn't exist.
To me, the definition of react is that you are not mentally involved in what you're doing. A response is where you have contemplated what your reaction is.
Yeah.
But to be reactive, it's like they push this button and you respond this way every single time.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're understanding that they're saying is reactive?
Yeah, it's a knee jerk.
Well, I can't argue with that.
Mm.
Can you?
Exactly.
I mean, I think that most people are reactive.
Mm.
They don't think.
Mm.
They just react. They've been trained to do that.
That's right. So, but it's like, the sky is blue. Let's make it white, you know. Well, that's what they're doing, isn't it? You know, your mind is fine as it is. You see what I'm saying? There's not what he's saying is that although everybody's fine in a certain way, it's not as bad as he's making it out to be. And basically, by taking you back through these journeys, through these other lives, and you create these other lifetimes, you're basically kind of displacing your guilt into another place. So it's the opposite of owning things. I think my phone is
so they're actually giving you an excuse to have further freedom.
Yes.
For being responsible?
Yes. You pay us more money and we'll clear these things. And the further back you go, the higher up you go, etc., 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 the more you pay. That makes sense.
Okay, so you're basically saying that even though this is a scheme to control the minds of people, that in the end it's a money-making thing?
Yeah.
at least by Hubbard's standards.
Yeah, I mean, the New World Order is a money-making enterprise. They're basically trying to create like one of those little bowl worlds, a bottle world, you know, where you got a little ecosystem in the bottle. So basically they create a race of people who will go to work, do their work, go home. On Saturdays they go out and buy things, and the rest of the time they sit watching TV, and everything's happy, you know. But in reality, everybody is squeezed for every single ounce of energy they can give, and that's why everybody's exhausted, because they've been squeezing as hard as they can.
All right. The Scientology came out of Hubbard's concept or his books, okay? Where does he claim that he got the information?
I think that Hubbard had been compartmentalized. Do you remember in that essay he said, how did he find Ron Hubbard? In a straitjacket in St. Elizabeth's Hospital after MK Ultra. I think they programmed him to create Scientology. And he appeared to be an expert bullshitter. He believed everything he said. And he made up stories. And he said that he wrote the story of Dianetics, the book of Dianetics, in one go. He bought a roll of... I mean, this is back in the days of typewriters. He bought a roll of Xerox paper. A paper in a roll, basically, so that he didn't have to change pages. He just typed continuously. And put the book out in like where's Nancy gone? Oh dear, what's happened? Oh dear, see, this is what happens when I have the chat room on this computer. Let me just see if I can get that back. Have we lost everything? Yes. Oh dear. So. We're waiting for Nancy to return. What's happening with the... I'll close that one. And close that one. And this one. And that one's got one as well. And see if we can get rid of all these. Yes. Okay. So, excuse me, my computer just slowed down and I lost Nancy, so let's try and get her back. Yes. Yes, Right, let's put a tune on. While I sort this computer out, shall I? Let's do this one. Welcome back to Wolf Spirit Radio and to Ever Beyond. I am here with my erstwhile co-host. With my co-host, Nancy Hopkins, and we're discussing the Scientologists. Now, who are they? Where are they? Now, I was talking about the New World Order and having a completely controlled population, and the idea that everybody has a kind of common spirituality, and that it was quite a... you know, you need to be quite sophisticated to sell it to our sophisticated modern minds. You know, you can't just say, you know, oh, there was a bloke up there in the cloud and he pointed his finger and lightning came down and everybody was born and everything was good. You know, you can't do that with today's sophisticated audience. You know, everybody's seen Star Trek. So what Hubbard did, he created this story, and it's the inner story of Scientology, and you don't learn this until you get really far out, far up the ladder, you know, until you're right in the deep thing, you learn this story, and it's the story of Zeno. Have you heard the story of Zeno?
No, I have not.
Let me just see. Let's see if we can... I think it's... Because this guy... And do you remember I mentioned all right, why is my machine running slow? I'm going to close Facebook because I think it's got shockwave flashes and like that breaking down. Right, okay, Google Earth. And now that'll speed things up. Right, okay, that's better. Now, what was I saying?
Zeno,
yeah. So, the story that the Scientologists eventually learn about, that is the kind of core, deep essence of the Scientology religion, is the story of Zeno. Let me just bring it up, because I'd like to, you know, they might even have it on a YouTube somewhere, because this guy, Scientology story of Zeno, this guy, Arnie, this guy I'm talking to, he's the guy that broke this story. He's the guy that released this story to humanity. This is the real story. Zeno. Who is Overlord Zeno? Right. Okay, so... Bob Adams, the Zeno story. Lovecraft. I'm just trying to find... Yeah. There we go. There we go. Hydrogen bombs. I mean, the story is, if you're not into it, the story is kind of like laughable. Like, what? Right. Is there anyone who has this? All right, here we are. Here we are. Because, I mean, it's all over the web. You just have to look for... The spelling is X-E-N-U. Zeno, right? So get this. You'll never find this information on Scientology's websites because they sell it for many hundreds of thousands of dollars. If their customers knew what they were purchasing before they purchased it, they would never fork out over the $400,000 required to buy it. Okay, so after giving Scientology $400,000, this is what you get. Okay, this is the story of Zeno. Let's have one of these. 75 million years ago, there was an alien galactic ruler called Zeno, who was in charge of 76 planets in our sector of the galaxy, including Earth, whose name at that time was Tegeac. All of the planets Zeno controlled were overpopulated by, on average, 178 billion people. Social problems dictated that Zeno rid his sector of the galaxy of this overpopulation problem. So he developed a plan. Zeno sent out tax audit demands to all these billions of people. As each one entered the audit centers for the income tax inspections, the people were seized, held down, and injected with a mixture of alcohol and glycol, that's antifreeze for people, and frozen. Then, all 13.5 trillion of these frozen people were put into spaceships that looked exactly like DC-8 airplanes, except that the spaceships had rocket engines instead of propellers. Zeno's entire fleet of DC-8-like spaceships then flew to planet Earth, where the frozen people were dumped in and around volcanoes in the Canary Islands and the Hawaiian Islands. When Zeno's Air Force has finished dumping the bodies into the volcanoes, hydrogen bombs were dropped into the volcanoes and the frozen space aliens were destroyed. However, Xenu's plan involved setting up electronic traps in Tegeak's atmosphere, which were designed to trap the souls or spirits of the dead space aliens. When the 13.5 trillion spirits were being blown around on the nuclear winds, the electronic traps worked like a charm and captured all the souls in the electronic, sticky, flypaper-like traps. The spirits of the aliens were then taken to a huge multiplex cinemas that Xenu had previously instructed his forces to build on Tegeak. In these movie theaters, the spirits had to spend many days watching special 3D movies, the purpose of which was twofold. One, to implant into these spirits a false reality, i.e., the reality that WOGs, Hubbard's derisory term for anybody who is not a Scientologist, know on Earth today. And two, to control these spirits for all eternity so that they could never cause trouble for Xenu in this sector of the galaxy ever again. During these films, many false pictures were implanted into these spirits, which resulted in the spirits believing in all the things that control mankind on Earth today, including religion. The concepts of religion, including God, Christ, Muhammad, Moses, etc., were all an implanted false reality that to this very minute is used to control WOGs on Earth, W-O-G-S, the world of, I don't know. When the films ended and the souls left the cinema, they started to stick together in clusters of a few thousand and remained that way until mankind began to inhabit the Earth. Today on Earth, all the spirits of these aliens have attached themselves to our bodies and are the root cause of the false reality that all but Scientology's Homo Novus, or OT-8, operating Theta 8 on Earth, experience. It is the job of all Scientologists to remove this false reality from the world by auditing each and every space alien spirit and human on Earth to clear not only this planet, but the universe. For those who oppose Scientology and stand in their way, like the Lisa McPherson Trust and all Scientology critics, Scientology promises to do away with them quietly and without sorrow. We have calculated that, on average, each person on planet Earth has 2,209 of these body thetans, BTs for short, Hubbard's term for the alien spirits, attached to you, causing you and all mankind to be constrained by Xenu's false reality. The average cost for Scientology to OT-8, which is the highest level, which is clear, is a mere $360,000, meaning that each BT only costs $163 to clear. Now that is a bargain if ever there was one. Hubbard never said the overall cost of the planet would be cheap, but let's examine it. The planetary cost equation is as follows: 13.5 trillion spirits times $163 equals a mere, now this is, $2,000 trillion. Oh, quadrillion, that's what they call it. All right. Just think about it. 2.2 quadrillion. That's enough to keep Rear Admiral Miscavige, the current head of Scientology, and Marty, his number two, in casino chips for a long time. To finish the story, the loyal officers of the Markab Confederation finally discovered how evil Xenu was and overthrew him. He is now locked away in a mountain in one of the planets, and kept in by a force field powered by an eternal battery. Several of Xenu's relatives can often be found on the internet news group called alt.religion.scientology, or ARS for short, Battling Scientology Daily. Many Scientologists who have left from the highest levels of Scientology have told us they have sat in a room at Scientology's Sandcastle building in Clearwater, Florida, for 5 to 7 hours per day for up to 10 years, holding two asparagus cans together, attached to a primitive lie detector, talking all day to these dead space aliens. And guess what? You'll never, ever finish talking to dead space aliens until you leave Scientology. We're repeating this story in the interest of full disclosure. If you become involved with Scientology, we want you to do so with your eyes open and fully aware of the sort of material it contains. And if you're in Scientology, you should know you will be spending the rest of your life. You should know how you will be spending the rest of your life. We do not. If you need to know more about Scientology, start at the following websites: lisatrust.net and xenu.net. xenu.net. I'm sure you'll find discussions on that story. Indeed, we do not object to anyone, Scientologists including, believing in alien cosmologies and practicing their truly held beliefs. In fact, the core beliefs of Scientology discussed above are a very colourful addition to the richness of the tapestry of beliefs held by mankind in the spiritual realm. We do have at least two problems, however, with Scientology's deception about its alien space opera. First, Scientology lies when it says that it is compatible with other religious beliefs. It cannot be, and is not compatible with any religious beliefs, since it clearly teaches that all religion is an implanted false reality. In fact, any other religious belief by a Scientologist is not even tolerated. Talk about your faith in Christ or about prayer in an auditing session, and off to the ethics officer you will go for some potential trouble source handling, because you are indulging in other practices. OT3, the level when a Scientologist learns about the alien cosmology and that religion is an implanted false reality, obviously ends any possibility of further illusion that Scientology can be compatible with any religious belief. Second, Scientology keeps its alien cosmology a secret for financial reasons. A Scientologist is required to go through a gradual progression of expensive steps before they are allowed to learn about the alien cosmology. They are told, if they learn about it prematurely, it will create a life-threatening situation. It will give them pneumonia, and they might die. We know of no reports of anyone ever getting pneumonia, much less dying from exposure to Xenu and the alien story. Hiding the truth about these alien beliefs serves several functions, including A. recruitment. Who would join if they were told about the alien beliefs up front? And B. money. Holding back the information buys time to collect more money from a recruit before the colourful information is revealed. C. control. Holding back the information allows Scientology to use the technology to indoctrinate and induce a person not to bolt when they do hear the alien story. This entire cover-up of this alien cosmology in Scientology is all about deception, lies, and money. The Lisa McPherson Trust is, the mission is to expose the abusive and deceptive practices of Scientology and help those who have been victimized by it. Clearly, the deception and lies surrounding the alien cosmology is something we must stand up against. Let's make this clear. It's not the alien cosmology itself that we object to. It's the deception and lies surrounding it. We are well aware that Hubbard wrote all the policies used by Scientology management today, which are at the heart of the entire war that Scientology has declared on its critics. Hubbard wrote the Manual of Dissemination, for example, in which he instructed his followers that the purpose of a lawsuit is to harass, not to win. He also wrote the Manual of Justice, in which he says that a reporter who dares to write anything critical about Scientology should be harassed and intimidated until he shudders into silence. He also wrote Attacks on Scientology, additional policy letter, in which he details how to destroy the reputation of anyone who is critical of Scientology. There are many, many others, including the most vile of Hubbard's policy, the Fair Game policy, which has been in continuous use by Scientology since it was written in 1967. Current management is revising these Hubbard policies for the reprints of the OEC and Tech volumes for legal and PR reasons, because Miscavige and his lawyers don't want the public to know how rabidly insane and vindictive Hubbard really was. But these are Hubbard policies without any doubt, current management continues to apply the original versions of these directives, but do not delude yourself that it was anyone else but L. Ron Hubbard who wrote them. We spent many hours with former Scientologists all over the world and have never hid our feelings about Hubbard. To politely summarize those feelings, we think Hubbard was a sinister con man and believe that the vast majority of people who know anything about him share this view. The point here is, while Miscavige may be seen as a monster, he's merely a proxy for carrying out the evil policies of L. Ron Hubbard. Miscavige is definitely not misapplying the evil parts of Hubbard's tech. We believe he is using them just as Hubbard intended. Further, we believe the Creed of Scientology has many noble elements to it, but think the Creed is a fraud, because Scientology and most Scientologists do not act in accordance with their creed. The Creed is pure PR, and Scientology and most Scientologists are hypocrites. A simple example of this hypocrisy is that their creed says that all men have an inalienable right to free speech, yet in practice that is only supported by the Church when the speech is laudatory of Scientology. Otherwise, you are publicly labelled a bigot and hate monger, and the fair game policies are applied against you. One of the most difficult aspects of recovering from Scientology seems to be former members coming to terms with their irresponsibility while they were in Scientology. Over and over again, we have had ex-Scientologists come to say to us, "I didn't know all about these bad things going on in the church," only to come back later and admit that they just didn't want to see it. Former Scientologists regret that they had bought into the church's lies so thoroughly that they couldn't see what was going on all around them. Many ex-Scientologists have told us that it's simply a lot easier not to have to take responsibility for these things. But everyone in the church is responsible for what the church is doing. Remember, the Scientology breeds irresponsibility, and Scientologists become addicted to that irresponsibility. What else could happen when, throughout your experience in Scientology, a engrams and your reactive mind are the root cause of your problem? Then, yeah, this is the progression. First of all, they call them engrams in your reactive mind. Then B, it's space aliens, BTs, and then it's drugged BTs, then sleeping BTs, then unconscious BTs, and D, you find that the entirety of the physical universe is a false reality that can be done away with by auditing all the BTs, so you are able to step out of the physical universe and be a ma above matter, energy, space, and time. I would say that probably creates a psychopath. Anyway, the above being said, we will defend the right of anyone to practice any truly held belief they choose. As some have chosen Scientology outside the church, we believe they should begin by publicly renouncing the evil and destructive policies of Hubbard and renounce the church's use of those policies. You see, as long as those policies remain in place, we don't have a lot of confidence that another brand of Scientology would not just become another church of Scientology, if given the opportunity. That's allexperts.com's answer. Presumably that was from an ex-Scientologist. So, there you go, Nancy. That's the story of Scientology. You want to be audited now?
No, I don't think I want to be audited. But, you know, it's really weird listening to that story because I kept thinking, what is wrong with these people that they would in any way, shape, or form follow this? And yet at the same time, I was getting, you know, input of all the people that are, in fact, walking around just blaming everybody except themselves. It's like they're attempting to work on an element of the human being that says, no, I'm perfect, I didn't do anything wrong, it's this guy or it's that guy or my boss or the fact that there's media out there telling me lies. I mean, they always want to be blaming somebody or something else. And at the same time, I kept remembering this video that I saw that came out in April of 14, so about a year ago, by Anelia Benz, and I talked about it on my show, Cosmic Reality, on Tuesday. But what happened was that when she would get a telephone call and somebody was asking her for help or whatever, she doesn't channel, like she doesn't say, I'm Jesus and I'm, you know, she just gets into a trance and tries to connect to the source information. So she always hits the record button. Well, she was going back through some tapes, and all of a sudden she's listening to something she had no recollection of reading, of doing the reading for, and didn't know what it was in reference to, but she started listening to it. And it's absolutely fascinating because she goes into a discussion of the Anunnaki. And I have, over the years, again, you know, certain things come up and you get a resonance like, that's probably true, but I don't think I need to know this information now. Some things like Scientology, you go like, I don't need that. That's full of crap. But this was one of them. And she started to tell the story of how they came here to basically mine everything that they could get, the gold and everything else. But in order to enhance the production of this taking of what they wanted from Earth, they did a genetic change to the highest humanoid that was around, and they made two versions, one being a version of a drone that will take orders. That's all they're designed to do, is take orders and work. And then another one of a leader, and their job is to give orders. And so they had these two different types of humans that were on the planet. Now, and to listen to her is very interesting because there's tremendous amount of time where she's just very silent, just trying to pick up the thread of the information. And when you get into that silence with her, it's really kind of meditative. It's almost like she draws you into the next piece of it. It's an artful YouTube. So anyway, she's listening to what she's trying to get out from them, and she realizes that there's a problem in that when the Anunnaki left Earth, what they should have done is they should have absolutely destroyed all of humanity because they had used their own genetics, their own DNA, in making these two different versions. What they didn't understand was what she called the multidimensional aspect of DNA. And now the Anunnaki are having a problem because as the human DNA has continued to evolve over these many millenniums, that DNA has got a resonance with the people in wherever they come from, and she told exactly Sirius, I don't know where she said they came from, but wherever they came from, that the people there that have been brought up in a society that's very controlled, very domineering, very, you are a drone and you are a leader, and the two shall not meet. All of a sudden, people are waking up in their own world, and they're starting to have social repercussions because they're going like, wait a minute, you know, because they're attached to the humans. So the humans are waking up, their DNA is expanding, that's affecting the Anunnaki nation world. And so now, and then Nelia stopped and she was like, some Puritans, Anunnaki Puritans, are trying to stop this by coming back to the source, which is Earth. And she goes into another, you know, long pause, and she's like trying to figure it out, and she goes, oh, there's a problem. They can't convince humanity to agree to an energy agreement for annihilation. Because when they programmed them genetically, they programmed in the necessity for survival. So their own sub-programming in the species of humanity is now preventing them from making an energetic change that would destroy them all and therefore purify the DNA that's out there, and they may be able to get control over their own world. Now, as you're telling me about these Scientologists, I'm going like, is this some kind of a ploy to eventually get humanity? Because you don't need all of humanity to agree to annihilation. All you need is the 100th monkey amount to make, oh yes, we will agree that we are just screwed to the hilt and we should be annihilated. All you need is that X number, the 100th monkey. Is it only 100 people? Is it 15,000, 7,000? You see all these different numbers. But there is a percentage, probably 10 to 15% of the world, that if they make an energy agreement and nobody gets up there to dispute it, boom, it's going to happen. And I can't say that this is, you know, this is the truth. It's just what was going through my mind as you're reading this whole story, is that, you know, it's a fictitious way of getting people in the Scientology world to inadvertently agree to self-annihilation, and that behind it all is the Anunnaki, the Puritans, trying to get control again.
Well, that's very interesting. I mean,
it's a great sci-fi thing, you know?
Yeah. I mean, look at your cosmic reality rule, majority rules.
Yep.
If you convince a large number of people to be sociopathically believing, then realities get created, don't they?
Nazi Germany.
Look at Scientology. Now, remember at the beginning of this, the people who created Scientology were the Ford Foundation and the Nazis. Or let's say it was the Nazis, because, you know, like, obviously Henry Ford or the Ford Foundation people. That's not necessarily Henry. I think he was quite altruistic, but it's a corporation. And the corporation is it's necrotic. It's a dead being. It's a corpse.
Well, the very definition.
And it only eats death.
Well, think of what a Nazi really means. You've got communism. Well, that's one for all. You've got democracy. That's all for one. And when you have a authoritarian regime, it's all for the state, all for the nation, all for the government. In the case of a party like the Nazis, it's all for the party. So it's even more controlling, more... What drives people into that kind of mentality, that kind of, you know, fervor for something that the rest of us think is a crazy idea, is the fact that the crazy idea, the party, is saying to you, if you belong to us, you are important. And that's what people are all the time looking for, is to have some meaning in their life, as screwy as some of these meanings are. And that's
any
why you
kind of meaning, yeah.
Yeah, that's why you have the layers of secrecy, you know, because certain people will only buy into it in a very limited way. Let's take Freemasonry, for instance. Freemasonry is layer upon layer of secrecy. But the initial people that get involved in Freemasonry are actually joining because it is a good business to do so. There is a massive amount of Freemason power in just small businesses. If you weren't a Mason in some of these towns, you weren't a good businessman. So there is a layer that just kind of joins it. I know friends of mine that have joined because what's good business? If you're not a Mason, you know. So they join because of that. Now you can't take those people up into these squirrely ideas that go beyond this, because they just would, they're not inclined to do it. And they would just say, well, these people are nuts. So they keep you in that lower kind of, you really don't know anything except that it's advantageous for your business to be associated with us. As you get deeper and deeper into the concepts of either Freemasonry or Nazism, you know, in the book Cosmic Reality, I draw a lot of conclusions because of the similarities between the Freemason thought and the way that they deal with their people and with the way that the Nazi Party controlled people. And of course, if you've ever studied it and you look at America, it doesn't take very long before you go, oh my God, it's happening here. I mean, I used to say, how did the German people possibly allow this to happen? And then one day I woke up and I said, oh my God, it's happened here, and it happened right in front of me, and I said nothing. Even though I was seeing it, I said nothing, because it is so insidious. It just kind of like creeps
now,
in.
Now you can say, all right, it's time to say it. I think it's really, I've been saying it for a couple of years, haven't I? I've been saying, this reminds me of 1938 Germany. And, you know, they're trying to recreate a global Nazism rather than a single country.
Oh, it absolutely is, without a doubt. Hmm. In the book, in my novel, in 9/11 Crusade, when you take each particle of the actual events that happened, you know, in 9/11, in 2001, and all of the various aspects of getting this thing done, okay, there's the underlying current that I tried to bring in, because I kept, I was reading all these, everybody knew, anybody that studied it knew it was a bunch of crap that they told us happened. So the bunch of crap, everybody's going, it's a bunch of crap, but everybody else was going like, oh, it couldn't be, I'm not going to think about it, I'm not going to think about it, I'm not going to think about it. And I'm going like, what is it that they're afraid of? Why can't they think about this? And I realized that the human brain, most humans, cannot conceive of evil. They see it, but they don't understand it, and so they can't get their heads wrapped around it. They don't react because they don't have the inner knowledge of why could this happen? There's so much evil involved in it. How could there be that many evil people? And so when I wrote the book, I was attempting in a novel, in a fictitious way, to explain the minds of the people that do this. Because they're not doing it because they're evil. They're doing it because they think they're doing right. And you go, how can people be doing something so evil as to bring down these buildings and kill 3,000 people? How can you possibly justify it? Because the means justifies the end. And they always have this perceived notion of what is right. And what is right is that they are right. That they belong to the group that really is the good guys, even though they're doing all this evil things. So the real, truly evil people are able to manipulate people that basically have good hearts into doing evil action because of this weakness that I see in human beings, that you need to have an identity, and the identity is not coming from within, it is being put on you from without. And therefore, in my estimation, the people that are dealing in Scientology are very dangerous. Very dangerous.
Very indeed. Well, you touched on so many things there, one of which was identity, which has been a trigger for me this week. I walked into the bank, and, you know, the same bank that I walked into for the last 12, 13 years. And I said, can we have your identity? And I, what? Well, welcome. And I started raising my voice. I said, welcome to Nazi UK. No, you cannot have my identity. You know who I am. And you really will know who I am now. Could you not raise your voice, sir? And she had the... You know what it is? There's a little... I don't know if you get it in America, but... In Britain, there's a kind of whiny little voice that these people who do bureaucracy put on. It's like, well, can you show us your ID, sir? And it contains so many elements of, I'm in the Nazi party and you're not. Number one, you're a little piece of scum because you got long hair and a beard, you know. And I'm far superior to you, and I'm okay, and you're scum. And don't raise your voice, because we'll have the police, you know.
The reason they get that squeaky voice is because they hate their jobs, and they hate the customers. But they're told by the bank that you have to be nice to them. And so as they're being nice, their voice cannot be loud and pure, because they're not loud and pure. Anytime somebody starts to get a squeaky voice on you, you be careful. But that's why they have squeaky voices, bureaucrats. They hate their jobs. I never met one that didn't. But by because
indeed, and so this comes back to another point, which was how they get you. You know, everybody's got emotions, right? And your emotions are infantile because we're all injured and traumatized as children. Right, and so we've all got fragments that can be triggered. So we've all got stuff. That's what I call stuff is these emotional triggers that can be triggered by, you know, just like the idea of a red apple or something, you know, like stupid things. Because people have associations, and if they're associated with fear, then they go into fear. And so people like the religions and people who want to convert. You know, it's interesting, you know, why do people want to convert religion? You know, because there's a kind of compunction to have a religion. You know, it's like you have to be a believer in some crap. Really? No? Maybe not. I prefer to believe in real stuff. I prefer to understand. And at the same time, I prefer to know. If there's anything like a God, I want to feel him, I want to speak to him, I want to talk to, you know, I want to hear him. You know, I don't want any prophet between me, or her, or them, or it. Yes, exactly. Exactly. Does it have to have a gender?
Well, yeah. The other part of this thing, the other part of this, the Scientology, I mean, any religion has the same, you know, intention of controlling their people by saying you cannot find the secrets except through me. But the real danger that I see of the Scientology is that they have enough people to pay that kind of money to keep it going. You've got the people that are the layers. You've got the people up at the top that know, and then you've got the people below that are doing the work, the evil work, with knowledge in their minds that they're with a special group, and this group is good. They're not doing it because they think they're doing evil. That's where we get fundamentally in problems, because what she said, what Anelia said, is that the awakening on Earth is going to happen. There's no doubt about it. And that the people that are going to need the most help are the very people who have been telling the lies, have been believing the lies and telling and passing on the lies. So those people right there, if you can wake them up, then you have virtually won the war. But you're going to wake them up, and they're going to be totally like, oh my God, I cannot believe that I've been living this lie. They're going to be in worse straits than we are. Because we were asleep, and all of a sudden we were, wait a minute, we never told anybody that this was real. We thought it was real because it was being lied to us as being real. So just the average person is going to wake up and go, thank God that was a bad nightmare. But these people, they're going to fight it and fighting the understanding, the awakening, because it will put them into a greater sense of jeopardy than the rest of us.
Well, but yeah, exactly. Exactly. They've got, you know, because, and it comes back to exactly what the problem is. You know, nobody wants to admit that they've done bad things. And everybody wants to blame somebody else for the reason that they did the bad thing.
Exactly.
And because.
And they've done worse bad things than we have.
Yeah. Exactly. And, you know, so you can really understand why they won't want to hear your position. Like, so how do you reverse a position like that? I mean, it's got to be because, you know, all of these programs, they have like a fail safe that if somebody confronts them with a truth or a higher truth, they're programmed to reject that too, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
See the problem,
and the people that, well, think about. She was pointing out the people on the media, you know, on CBS and ABC and NBC and all of them, saying to people, "Oh yes, there was another UFO. All these crazy people saw this UFO, and then they see one themselves." That's the way she put it. You know, it's like, holy crap! At a certain point in time, they're going to, because you. People like me and people, a lot of people, other people who have had actual experiences with UFOs and with spirits and with guides and all that, you can't convince us that that's not real, because that is our experience. We have that, but they don't. And so they can't, they really do think that the rest of us are crazy. But when they have the experience, when something is so in their face that they can't deny it, then they will go through the change, because they can't deny it. It's in their experience. And that's why I think that certain events like 9/11, if it finally comes out, all you have to do is to make them pay attention to what you're saying. And that's the problem, is that there's not enough people out there saying, wait a minute, that's not how it happened. And that's where the fallacy comes, or the problem comes with those people that are awakened. One of the situations that ended up me writing the book, 9/11 Crusade, was because I was trying to have a conversation with somebody to enlighten them on all of the problems on the government's theory as to how everything happened. Now, the number one way of completely shattering their explanation is they claim that each of the floors crashed into the one below, causing a pancaking effect.
Oh, the pancake, so, yeah.
Okay, now, there were 70 floors. In one of the buildings, there were 70 floors. I dare anybody out there to clap their hands 70 times in 11 seconds. Those buildings disappeared in 11 seconds. How can you possibly say it was pancaking when you can't even clap your hands 70 times in 11 seconds? Now, if you can bring that concept into the minds of all of these people out there that just haven't even thought about it, you know, go ahead. If it's right, then you should be able to clap your hands 70 times. They can't do it. It's impossible. So those type of things, if people would talk about it, but everybody says, what happened to me? It's like I'm explaining this to this guy, and I didn't know that little fact. That was Judy Wood that said that, and it was like, oh, my God, if I had had that fact years ago, you know, I would have got...
I have to say, Nancy, that when I saw... On September the 11th, I watched the TV. It was in the afternoon for us. And I saw that and I thought, they're demolishing that building. They're not, that's not a terrorist. That's how audacious, the audacity of them to say that that was a terrorist attack. That was pure chutzpah, as we say in Yiddish.
Oh, there was a lot of people who didn't believe it.
As they say in the Mossad, yeah? Anyway, so I'm gonna give out the secret. This is the big secret. This is how the trick works, okay? And it's a technique. It's a covert way for an unethical person to get what they want from others by causing others to believe whatever they wish them to believe. This technique is to state a shocking, outrageous claim, like Holocaust denier, followed by the lies you wish the person to believe to be true. A lurid, emotionally intense thought-stopping claim, vivid language that invokes imagery like worm. After thinking stops, one is more easily influenced by direct suggestions. Everything they tell their members just after the shocking accusation will be held as true for them, without their thinking consent, directly embedded into the subconscious, as a fact. This is not hypnosis as such, but is more the implanting of a phobia, the generation of a complex in the mind of the target, and in the minds of those watching the exchange. This is a secret technique of lawyers to influence jurors. It is also a military technique to cause the person to believe as true whatever is stated just after the lurid and shocking opening statement. Used in what is known as the stage attack method, a parental authority technique, and used with prestige suggestion, it is similar in tone to how a child is treated who has done something bad and tends to regress an adult and the audience watching towards intensely prior suggestible infantile emotional states, drawing its power from those early incidents. It creates a subconscious phobia to avoid anything to do with whatever reminds them of the unpleasant experience. This is the method used that has driven most of the enthusiasts off the net, as is too ugly to stay here. So, having established the description of the technique, this is what Hubbard did. While using prestige to aid suggestion, there's a technique called prestige technique. It's a hypnotic, like hypnosis, stage hypnosis. He would say, "I am an atomic physicist," said Hubbard. He would then discuss gory prefrontal lobotomies, abortions, and horrible electroshock therapy in a lurid, emotionally intense manner, which stops the person thinking. Then tells them that they have a reactive mind. Then he calls it the bank, and convinces you that you must get rid of it. This makes getting your money easy because the subconscious is literal. He says you will reach a state called clear, which, if you consider what it does to your mind as a command, the word clear is what helps make your friends, family, wife's hopes, dreams, and bank account disappear, leaving only your very good friend, L. Ron Hubbard, or in Jesse's case, my good friend, Patricia Greenaway, as the operator of your trance for the profit in both cases. We're using the profit with an F, not a PH, in this case. There you go, Nancy. That is the secret. Now, if anybody takes this, you can form your own religion using these techniques from this program. Maybe I shouldn't put this in the archives. Maybe we should charge lots of money for it. Have a secret weird technique for forming your own religion. Just pay us $50, please, per month to rent this idea from me.
But, you know, the thing of it is what you described is exactly what they did to the entire world on 9/11. They shocked us with the most bizarre visual effect. I mean, down to the timing that so many people were on the television. They waited until everybody was looking at it. And then they did this amazing, you know, visual effect of this huge building just going into dust. All right? Now, that shocked people. In my book, every time, well, there's some people who didn't really get involved in that didn't get burnt like that, did not get programmed like that, for whatever reason. They pick up the book, they read through it, oh, it's a good story. This is true, because they feel like this might be true, but not a problem with them. It's fiction. But is this true? But the people that had an emotional response to it, the ones that ended up, just like you're saying, get done in the audience, you know, in preparation for taking their money. That same kind of here, this is this horrible thing, it's going to make your brain stop, okay? Those people get to the same part in the book where I am in very vivid way describing what's happening, and they cannot continue reading because they're having a post-traumatic stress event.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what is happening.
Exactly, and at that point, this is where people need deprogramming, because and we're going to have to do it another day. Maybe we could cover this in Frank's program, because who knows what's going on next? Who knows what's happening this Sunday? I don't know what's going to happen tonight. I'm very pleased. Thank you, Nancy, very much for joining me and for joining in this discussion, because I think it involves everybody, really. Because it's really what we're about. We're about deprogramming from this PTSD.
That's what it is. Thank you, Jack.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Let's use the right button now. There we go. Okay, up next, Frank Jordan and the Earth Mind Think Tank. Beyond.